We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Wareham and District Advertiser, read by Charlotte Green.
A new slimming consultant is taking over at Wareham with ambitious plans to double the size of the group.
Thanks to Margaret Wallen of Litchett Metroverse for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you please welcome first on my right, Linda Smith, and a newcomer to the News Quiz, Richard Whiteley. And facing them on my left, Jeremy Hardy, and another newcomer to the quiz, triple Sony Award winner, John Gaunt. The first question goes to you, Linda, and you may just be able to get it. Which lady was for returning?
Oh, that's so cryptic. Who could it be? Well, of course, it's the old Baroness. They get guilty about leaving her in the home. And before the conference, the Tories all go, oh, is it a year? Oh, we must get her out. Oh, dear. Well, she came to us last Christmas. And she's completely confused. She's looking at all these, you know, Tory people and saying, you're not the shadow cabinet, but, of course, we don't recognise them either, so why should she? It's nice to see how age has mellowed her, really, isn't it? I think she'd be advertising Werther's Originals next. It was a bad illusion as well, because she looks a bit more like Gary Oldman as Dracula now. Amazing rococo hairdo that she's got.
I think she did quite well at her age, if I may say so, to make, well, I think...
She's only 37.
Well, I wasn't as good as that when I was 37. Simon, you will know from the party conferences how nervous she used to get before the big party speech on the last day. And apparently, one
night...
Is
that nervous in the Oliver Reed sense of the word?
Apprehensive, let's say.
As a newt.
She was She was pacing around her room with her speechwriters one year, late at night on the Thursday beforehand, getting very nervous. And her speechwriter was Sir Ronald Miller, the playwright. And getting very nervous. And so just to reassure her, Sir Ronald Miller said, piece of cake, Prime Minister, piece of cake. And apparently she said, Ronnie, how can you possibly think I can eat at this time of night?
It just shows how out of touch they are, because they've got to play this double game, the Tories. That on the surface, they're trying to appeal to the media as kind of liberal, intelligent people, but underneath that, they have to appeal to all these crazies, you know. And Portillo tries to sort of chivvy us along that he's a little bit Spanish and a bit liberal. And the moment that Portillo pleaded for tolerance at the conference, it was akin to the change of mood in the jury in the case of Wilde versus Queensbury, wasn't it? But they are just so lost, the Tories. You can tell that big business is no longer in bed with them, because it wouldn't let them go out looking like that, would it? They're such a mess. They've let themselves go. They've been jilted for a younger and much more attractive right-wing party. The party's so passionate about. Yeah. Because Labour's prepared to do things that the Tories were too inhibited to do. Right? It's doing tricks that big business never even dreamed that they could get out of a political party. You know, because Labour's big thing was that it failed to present itself properly to big business, and now it really does present itself to big business in a very natural history sense of the word.
Lady Thatcher has weighed in for William Hague's election campaign. Thatcher gave Hague a warm endorsement, saying that if she ever stood down as party leader, he should certainly be considered. Richard, one from the top row for you. Whose report just isn't cricket?
Oh, this is the long-awaited report on the match-fixing in the noble game of cricket. And, of course, interesting that we've said for years and years, it just isn't cricket. And apparently this is cricket, because a lot has been going on a long time, and not helped, of course, by the advent of mobile phones, where people are rung up in hotel lobbies from potentates in the Middle East and the Far East to ask, what's the weather like in Trent Bridge? So this was a report by Paul, now to be a people's peer, Lord Condon, who didn't condon what was going on.
I was fascinated by the idea of this mafia hit. Mm. that in cricket, I mean, it's terrible for the person that was taken out, but you think, this is marvellous. I mean, in John Arlott's day, and there's a black Mercedes sweeping around. And as he steps off the curb there, it's bada-bing, bada-boom. They've taken him out on this beautiful spring day. And we've got some marvellous crack from the Colombian Mafia.
I like the way that he talks about a conspiracy of silence and corruption and an inability to act. I wonder whether he remembers the Stephen Lawrence case when he was in charge of the Met.
Say though, with this cricket thing, I mean, now this is a big culture shock that English people are having to learn to live with, which is being reasonably all right at sport. but up until, well, it takes a bit of getting used to. So go, oh, that England cricket team are, oh, they've won. Oh, turn up. But, you know, until fairly recently, you thought, well, how on earth could they rig matches with England? What could you possibly do to make us beat Australia? You could give the entire Australian team animal tranquilizers. And we still would have managed to draw.
Lord Conlon, in his report, described an atmosphere of silence, apathy, ignorance and fear. But that's enough about Conservative Central Office. Or, in the interest of balance, Labour Party Central Office, Liberal Democrat Central Office, Plaid Cymru, etc., etc. So, 2 points there to whoever got that. John.
Me.
2 points there to Richard Whiteley. Must be very odd getting points, huh?
Yes, I normally give points, but to get a point is rather nice, actually.
You
yes,
do realise we don't have cash prizes here, do you?
No, well, I'm very used to that. We don't have money on Countdown, no.
Mm. Oh, right.
Just a teapot and a mug. A dictionary.
You might win a caravan.
No.
John, who risked getting the sack over refusing to get the sack?
Ah, that's the postman, isn't it? A lightning strike there. Official action. They went out at Watford. So then the post office managers thought it was a good idea to take the post from Watford to that hotbed political activism, Liverpool. The Scousers saw the post and they saw the fact that they were posted to Watford, so they refused to sort the post. So then what did the Royal Mail managers do then? The official strike in Watford had finished. They sent the post from Liverpool, where they were on unofficial strike, back to Watford. So the boys in Watford said, we're not going to deal with the post from Liverpool, so they went on an official strike. And then the post office managers come on and say, we don't know how it happened. You don't think this is linked somehow, do you, to the fact that some people would like to see the post office privatised even more?
Oh, no.
No.
Not possible.
Yeah, I was reading The Independent, and the Independent is such a non-political newspaper. It was complaining about the incompetence of postmen. And I thought, no, you don't understand. It's a strike. Lost a letter box. What on earth are they doing? They've signally failed to put the letters through the... No, you see, they've withdrawn. They're not going to work. Well, don't they know the way to work? What's wrong with them? So they do that. They're refusing to accept being forced to do 10-hour shifts on a Saturday. Well, don't they understand that it's just a normal shift only during unsocial hours and for a very long time? What's the matter with these people?
And why have they put cling film around the post boxes? Have you noticed? It's actually cling film around the entrance.
That's a safe post thing. That's a public health matter.
Don't lick that envelope. You don't know who's licked it before.
That's to foil the people who urinate in post boxes. Well, since they've got rid of all the phone boxes, what are you supposed to do? You can't do it by email, can you?
Over a dozen of the country's sorting offices were completely closed, meaning that for several towns and cities, the only person left able to arrange letters in a logical fashion was Carol Vorderman. Jeremy, why is a senator out of hand worth a majority to Bush?
This is Senator Jim Jeffords, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, they're funny, these turncoats. It's a bit like Sean Woodward, who's left the Tories, except that at least Jim Jeffords left the Republicans at a time when they were doing quite well. It's fascinating, these people. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they had a dream, a really bad dream in which a series of ghosts appeared. But they suddenly just sort of wake up and say, good Lord, this party I'm a member of is absolutely appalling. What on earth have I been thinking of? And, of course, it's a religious thing. It's biblical that we like people that repent. Deathbed conversions and jail cell revelations and lifelong diabolists who say that Satan is no longer the Antichrist he joined. And and so your man, Jeffords, has left the Republicans. And you think, well, what? It's taken something, hasn't it? It's taken the bombing of Cambodia, Watergate, the support for the fascism in Chile, El Salvador and Nicaragua, the abolition of the welfare state, the bombing of Iraq, the sanctions against Iraq. But when it comes to dairy subsidies in Vermont, that is going too far.
Correct. Republicans have warned that Senator Jeffords' defection could wreck George W.'s legislative program, ruining his regional policy, his plans for the environment, and all his transport plans, so doing for Mr. Bush what John Prescott has managed to do for New Labour. So we start round two with a cutting from the corrections and clarifications column of The Guardian.
The article in our education supplement, pages 10 and 11 yesterday, does make sense, but only if the columns are read in the following order. One, four, two, three, six, five, seven. Apologies.
Thanks to Terry and Pat Ward of Woodford Green for that. Linda, who's going to do his fair share of time?
Ah, now this is this timeshare man, isn't it? No. Timeshare criminal, who I think he got a bit overconfident because he was cleared of laundering money in the Brinksmat robbery and went on to the far more nefarious business of timeshare sales. He's nicknamed Goldfinger, isn't he, this man?
He is.
Presumably based on that Bond villain who sold lots of timeshares to people. One of the less successful Bond films, I think. I think he was perhaps played by Roy Kinnear or someone. Glamorous villain, really, conning old pensioners out of their savings. So,
this Mr. Bond, welcome to Fuengirola. We've been expecting you. Yeah. I think Goldfinger must have melted down the gold and then painted it onto the pensioners to the point they become so disoriented that they just accept this thing. Put it down, speak your Spanish. It doesn't matter, you're an expat, you're not expected to speak the language. Take the timeshare and go and live there. Oh, all right, then. I can't breathe.
Wasn't it rather touching that isn't he equal to the Queen in the rich list? And yet he chose to defend himself because he couldn't afford a barrister. Well, he wanted to save money anyhow.
During his time,
I think that might prove to be a false economy on his part. Pennywise, £70 million foolish.
During his time in Spain, Palmer intimidated holidaymakers, smashed up property, and generally behaved appallingly. Spanish police took several years to realise that he was a criminal and not just one of a Club 1830 holiday. Richard, who's been accused of burgering up their order of fries?
Well, I don't know, but I suppose I can work it out.
We may not have time.
Yes, let me give you...
Who's been accused of burgering up their order of fries?
If I could give you an M and a C.
Yes. Well, I thought of that, but I didn't know we were allowed to say it.
If we're not allowed to say it, it makes answering this question a bit tricky.
Shall I just write it down?
Yeah, we should have got the clever time. One from Countdown.
Well, I'm going to answer this question in the only way I know how. And I'm going to say McDonald's.
Yeah, but the programme hinges on people saying rather more than the answer, Richard. In itself, the format of a panel game isn't that interesting. That's
I'll give you a point for that. Perhaps you know the answer.
Well, yeah, we do know the answer, don't
you
we, Richard?
Do as well.
It's about their chips, isn't
yes.
it? Which have offended various religious groups because they claimed that their chips are made of vegetable, as you might reasonably assume. But in fact, they're fried initially in melted down buffalo or something.
If you're looking for a veggie place to go, you want to find the sort of place where the palate hang out. You don't really want to. Well, having said that, since Foot and Mouth, veggies have got an unaccustomed ruddy glow about them, haven't they? People think that pallor is to do with it being a bad diet. It's actually very healthy for. It's just that sanctimoniousness is so bad for the complexion. Why isn't ever a chickpea blight? That's what I want to know.
You
you wouldn't think McDonald's would be their restaurant of choice, really, would you?
Are you suggesting it's not a byword for fine dining?
It's a temple to carnivorism. It's just it's like going to a slaughterhouse and saying, oh, can I just beat one up a bit? Slap it around.
It's McDonald's American arm, which has admitted that its, quote, vegetarian fries were actually pre-cooked in beef fat, causing outrage to vegetarians and Hindus in America. John, listen to this. The theme tune from Zorba the Greek. Who's had his fill of Phil this week?
Ah, well, that's Prince Philip, isn't it? Is that Prince Philip? Calling his son a wimp. Not Prince Edward this time, but Prince Charles. Saying he's not fit to be king. But fancy that, you know what I mean? You've been groomed all your life to be the king. I'm going to be the king. I'm going to be the king. And then your dad goes and gives an interview and says, over my dead body. And you think, well, no, not actually. Be over your wife's.
Correct. Apparently you're supposed to stand up to him. He doesn't like Charles, because Charles never stood up to him. Because this is the crack with Philip, you see. He's trying to wind you up, trying to provoke you, and he wants you to give as good as he gets. So when he comes to your country and says insensitive things, you're supposed to say, well, bug off back to Athens, you grand-eyed bubble, yeah.
So are you suggesting he's the Anne Robinson of royalty, then?
Yeah, he respects you if you fight back, you see. If you give in to him, he hates you all the more. That's why he hates grouse so much, because they don't put up a fight. Come on with you, put up your dukes, damn you!
I think, Prince Charles, he's sort of like the Private Pike of the royal family. Desperate need to be loved and get things right.
I'm just amazed and shocked that the gracious lady, the Queen Mother, refers to him as the Hun. Did you read that?
She's Scottish, the Queen Mother, haven't you heard? She's like, oh, get a penny here, yeah. Yeah, daughter's only gone mad a bloody crate from Greece, hasn't she?
See me, I'm the Queen Mother.
Actually, putting him in charge, he was once the president of the World Wildlife Fund. What sort of joke was that? It's like making Anne Robinson in charge of Ice Steadfords, isn't it?
Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Romford Yellow Advertiser.
Playtime, specialised girls, toys, uniforms, etc. Different girls daily. Discreet rear entrance.
Sorry, Charlotte, it's just not up to dog or fish a German bite.
North at Sierra, south at Sierra.
Thanks to Derek Jones of Upminster for that. Linda, which royal house is listening to house music?
Oh. Royal house listening to house... not Royal's Royal House. The Royal Opera House, isn't it? The Royal Opera House, in a bid to get a bit of decent music in for change, are going to have things like, I don't know, opera house music, I suppose, and also films. Aren't they going to have films? Anything for a bit of entertainment, really, which I imagine they're desperate for at the opera house. I know this is an opera house, but it is dreadful opera, isn't it? I mean, why do they just sing things that you're supposed to say? It's ridiculous. It's like you went round somebody's house and they said, would you like a cup of tea? Only if you're having one, don't make one just for me. And then they have that really annoying thing they do where the bloke goes off and he's meant to be in disguise and he just comes back and it's the same bloke but he's got a hat on. So, oh, no one recognises him even though they saw him 2 minutes ago. Oh, he's got a hat on. Oh.
But aren't they going to help people like you, Linda, because they're going to put TV screens on the back of the seats so they'll have translations in 5 different languages. I think it's a pretty good idea.
No, I'd rather they have porridge on that table.
You probably have that as well. Then you pretend you go to the opera like a lot of people and enjoy it and actually understand what it's about. But they're going to put them in at the RSC as well. It's going to be like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? They'll come on and say, to be or not to be? And then it'll flash up on your screen. Shitting A. Bugger off back to university and forget about it. B, kill his stepdad. C, you get the idea.
And another thing is, the jokes are really stupid. Oh, you ought to be cross-garter. You know, it might have been funny in Shakespeare's time, but it's we've got only fours and horses now. We know what's funny.
Oh. Well, you'd get on with Carol Vorderman, wouldn't you? Just like Shakespeare.
Oh,
off.
No, she I said, like Shakespeare. I just don't like people pretending the jokes are still funny.
Well,
the tragedy's
said...
still tragic, but the jokes aren't still funny.
Well, it's because they were written topically in Jacobean times.
Well, exactly. That's why it's pretentious to
That's why it's ludicrous for people to buy the tapes of this, even though they're cheap and an excellent Christmas gift.
Actually, they are astonishingly affordable. Mm.
But if you're going to do Shakespeare properly, it should be done in the Warwickshire accent,
yeah,
really.
In the Brummie accent. It'd be brilliant.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, crepes and this petty pies from day to day. Deliver every gorgeous time.
Boy upon each voyage is an unwinded card in the crowd is served. Drinking grass and nature possesses my life.
2 points, Richard. Lordy.
What? We're having fun, you miserable old grove.
Here's
we're
fun.
Back in Yorkshire, you'd have to revert to your miserable grumpy ways.
Richard, Sibby, why is it no longer correct to suggest that travel broadens the mind?
Will you cut down this pause on the edit, please? I know what it is. It's because they have discovered that people who have irregular sleep patterns, their brain shrinks. They've tested this on various professions, including pilots, international pilots, and people who have babies, you know, who wake in the middle of the night, and so on. And also probably breakfast TV presenters as well, I would have thought. And the evidence is that their brain shrinks because of long-distance travel and irregular sleep patterns.
Whereas...
Is that right?
Tea-time TV presenters have enormous brains because they sleep till 3 o'clock.
I'm sorry, it's not very funny answer, I'm afraid.
But it's a true
it
answer.
It was the answer, wasn't it?
It is the answer,
thank
yes.
you.
Truth has its own internal humour, I think. But it's not always pretty.
Have you been doing a lot of travelling recently?
You do get off the plane when it lands. You don't just go back.
A group of scientists has spent months studying the frontal lobes of air hostesses. At least that's how they described it. They came to the conclusion that repeated jet lag actually shrinks the brain, causing memory loss and disorientation. Anyway, 2 points. Jeremy, which soccer star had a close shave with the critics over his decision not to play with Barnett?
This is Beckham. He's not quick with words, Beckham, is he? Ball, wife. Although he seems quite alert compared to the President of the United States, who makes Beckham look like Noam Chomsky. But, he's had his hair cut, and it's very interesting that he's had a haircut that is not fashionable and is not interesting and probably cost him 200 quid to have done somewhere, and it's just a Mohican, or a Mohawk, as I think it was originally called when it was first done. He was at home one night and thought, what shall I do? Either I can learn to write my name in the ground with a stick, or I can go to the barber's and have some of my hair removed.
He didn't do it himself because Victoria doesn't let him have sharp objects.
No. They've had the baby's hair done funny as well.
This is the rumour that the baby's had the same haircut.
Oh, no.
Well, if that's true, I think some of us should keep them talking while someone else phones social services. That wouldn't be right, would it? Be having tattoos next, that baby. Rusks.
David Beckham's haircut has been described as a Robert De Niro-style Mohican. Becks insists the new coiffure was the image he wanted. Not much up top and nothing between the ears. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
Oh, sorry, not quite ready with me cutting. Could you ask me again, Simon?
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard.
Well, this was read in the Mirror yesterday, the day before the lady who wrote this in. Saw it in the mirror.
Richard,
oh, actually, yesterday.
Richard, is English your first language? You're doing very well.
The car in which Anne Widdecombe was pictured on page 4 on Saturday was not a Ford Cortina, but a P100, a model based on the Cortina. Production of the Cortina stopped in 1982. There is no information on when production of Anne Widdecombe's was halted.
Linda.
Oh, this is sent in by Ron Doughty of Wiltshire. It's from Voices of Shooting magazine. NASA recently invented a particularly interesting gun. It fires dead chickens. The purpose is obvious. One of the biggest threats to aircraft is the effect of bird strikes. So what better way of testing equipment safely on the ground than by firing a large piece of poultry at it? British engineers developing a high-speed train realised this was ideal for testing windscreens and borrowed a gun from Houston. But amazement turned to horror as the chicken, hurled from the barrel, smashed the shatterproof shield to splinters, blasted through the control console, snapped the driver's backrest in two, and embedded itself in the rear wall of the cabin. In panic, the engineers sent the results of the test together with the windshield design to NASA and begged for their suggestions. NASA responded with a one-line memo: thaw the chicken.
John.
This comes from Anthony Allen. It's minutes of the December the 9th meeting of the North and East London branch of Equity. Health and safety and members' items. Maureen Moses contracted gastroenteritis twice due to unsanitary conditions on film and TV location shoots, and she told Equity all about it. Arising from this, the chairman allowed her motion.
Jeremy.
Well, this was actually given me. This occasionally happens. You think, well, I wonder what I'll have for a cutting this week. And I was in the grocer's and a bloke came up and gave me one. He did. Caught me by the plums, madam. Here, I'll tell you what. No, this is true. A man came and he gave this to me. And it's a packet from some cello strings from Italy. And it's got the instructions in various languages. And this is the English translation. Thanks to this type of metal strings, it has been possible to achieve both the sweetness of sound and the softness to feel that one can recall the bowel strings of the past. But this type far better than the latter, owing to the promptness in emission. It's the language of love, you know.
Thank you all. Let's look now at the final score. Linda and Richard have a very creditable 14, but Jeremy and John are this week's winners with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's a planning application spotted in the Solihull Times.
Potter's Chicken Farm, Barston. Change of use from chicken shed to ballroom dancing studio.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Linda Smith, John Gaunt and Richard Whiteley. The chairman was Simon Hobbit and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Debbie Barham, Lev Fountain, George Bowles and Simon Littlefield. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.